are three new justices on the Supreme Court, and they're about to take up a significant case that will reveal a lot about how they'll interpret the U.S. Constitution, including on religious liberty. Hi, I'm Stuart Shepard, and this is First Liberty Live. If you've already downloaded our app, thank you. If you haven't, may I recommend it to you? I've got it on my phone. It works great. It's a good way to keep up with the content that we do here on First Liberty Live. It'll even notify you when new things are posted on there. One thing about it, you can't watch our episodes live. That's only on firstlibertylive.com. But with the app, you can always watch them after the fact, which is really helpful. So recommend it to you. You know, First Liberty focuses exclusively on religious freedom cases. That's all we do. But in our battle for religious freedom, a key question is what the new court, what those three new justices will be like. How will they rule? How will they interpret the Constitution, especially on high-profile cases? And, well, a case out of Mississippi is about to tell us a lot about how they would be expected to rule on the religious liberty cases that we take to the court. And that's why we're going to be talking about it today. So I asked my friend Bruce Hausknecht if he would join us. He is judicial analyst at Focus on the Family. Hi, Bruce.
Hey, Stuart. How are you?
I'm good. Good to see you again. This is a significant case out of Mississippi. It's called the Dobbs case. It deals with the life issue. It all started with a challenge to a pro-life law. What's it all about?
Well, in 2018, the Mississippi legislature passed this law, which essentially prohibits abortion after 15 weeks gestation. And it has only two exceptions. One of those is for medical emergencies, and the other is for severe fetal abnormalities. That was immediately challenged in federal court and was struck down as unconstitutional under Roe versus Wade and Planned Parenthood versus Casey. And it made its way up to the Supreme Court, which will hear arguments coming up on December 1.
And I'm hearing a lot of experts say that, and there are varying opinions on it, but I'm looking for yours, that this is a direct challenge to the longstanding Supreme Court ruling that you just mentioned, Roe v. Wade, and its companion case, Doe v. Bolton, that it's a direct challenge to those. Why is that? Why is it such a challenge to those rulings?
Right, because between Roe versus Wade and Casey, the Supreme Court said basically that any type of prohibition on abortion prior to viability of the fetus is unconstitutional. Now, that rule is completely arbitrary, and that's probably one of the reasons why this case has made it all the way up to the Supreme Court. But that is the rule. Viability is kind of the guiding line that the Supreme Court uses.
Okay.
Now, 15 weeks, which Mississippi law, you know, talks about, is definitely before viability. Therefore, that law, Mississippi's law, is completely incompatible with Roe or Casey. Therefore, that's why it's a direct challenge. And over the last several years, a lot of states, a lot of pro-life states, have gradually passed these types of laws, everything from the 15-week you're seeing in Mississippi to the heartbeat bill from Texas and several other states that have tried it. So they all want to bring this issue to the Supreme Court so to have the court revisit Roe and Casey.
Now, in the past, on other decisions, we've seen them sort of sidestep the issue or try to find a workaround. But my understanding is this one, there's no other path. They're really going to have to contend with it and deal with it somehow.
That's correct. A lot of the other cases involve regulations around the fringe of abortion, such as informed consent or waiting periods or medical standards for abortion clinics, those kinds of things. But none of those laws that have passed and been upheld really deal with the question of whether you can actually prohibit abortion at any point. As many people that listen to your broadcast know, you can't really, because of Roe versus Wade, prohibit abortion at any time, all the way up to the point of birth. And that's one of the problems with Roe. And it really did not get fixed by Casey, because there's this health of the mother exception that always has tagged along with Roe and Casey, that always allows an abortionist to say, look, I think your mental health is in jeopardy here because of this baby, so I can now terminate your baby for you. So no problem with that. And that's the issue that has created the culture war over the last 40 years. And that is why Mississippi's, this case right now coming up is so important. It is a dividing line between what the court has done and where it could go in the future.
And that's what I'd like to bring this around to, because it's one thing for experts around the country to point to this and lay out the case that you just did, but it's really going to come down to how many justices on the court will take that more constitutional rendering, if you will. And that, what I'm getting at here is there is a secret, if you will, behind Roe v. Wade that doesn't get talked about, I don't think, often enough, and that's simply this. It has no real foundation in the Constitution at all. And even legal scholars on the other side of the issue, on the pro-choice side, have conceded that, right?
Now, that is very true. Everyone from Lawrence Tribe of Harvard to Ed Lazarus, who is a former clerk of Harry Blackmun, the justice who actually wrote Roe versus Wade, they have all criticized the reasoning of Roe and said there is no tethering of this thing to the Constitution, either to its text or its history or tradition. So even that, the liberal academy doesn't like Roe. They are for abortion, but they recognize and have admitted that Roe is just badly reasoned from the get-go.
Now, the founders built a system of checks and balances into our government. Everyone who had high school civics courses knows that. And for example, when lawmakers go too far with legislation, it's up to the Supreme Court to remedy that. They'll say this far but no further, or strike down a law completely or reshape it, that sort of thing. And that we know that is judicial review. But with Roe v. Wade, the court itself, as you just laid out, went too far. And the only remedy for that really is for the court itself to fix it, is my understanding. Am I on the right track?
Yeah, you're absolutely, because they are purporting to explain the 14th Amendment to us. And once the Supreme Court issues a ruling like that, the lower courts are bound to follow it. And what Harry Blackmun did in 1973 was essentially create a regime for abortion. He divided a woman's pregnancy of 40 weeks into three trimesters and said, you know, in the first trimester, nobody can prohibit it. In the second trimester, a state might be able to defend the or prohibit or legislate on the basis of preserving a woman's health. And then after the third trimester, of course, they said the state can prohibit abortion except for the life or health of the mother. And that was a completely arbitrary rule that Harry Blackmun decided to create. And Casey, which came along 19 years later, 1992, all that did was keep Roe's shell, the outer shell, intact. There is a right to abortion, but it completely gutted the reasoning of Roe and created this viability standard and said anything that creates an undue burden on a woman's right to obtain an abortion prior to viability is unconstitutional. And that's kind of the rule we've been living with ever since. That's just legislation from the bench. That's what state legislatures should be doing throughout the country and were doing before 1973. But in that year, what the Roe court did was simply yank the plug on the process that was going on throughout the states and decided we know how to fix this problem across the country. It didn't work, never has.
And that brings us to the issue about the court that is above all of this discussion. I mean, it's about what it's about, but there's also this larger issue about the way that the court approaches the Constitution, and we'll particularly be watching the three new justices to see what they do with this one, because the court has a tendency to want to maintain prior decisions. They want to keep that legacy, if you will, and in effect show respect for the decisions that were made in the past. And part of that, my understanding is to show their legitimacy as a ruling body, that they're trying to say, look, we're trying to get it right, and they tried to get it right, and we're going to maintain. But the other is to try to fix things when they're wrong. And there are times in the past when the court has done that, when they've pointed out and said this decision was just wrongly decided, that the foundations of it weren't right, and they've tried to fix it. And that's really what this comes down to and why we're going to be watching those three judges. What are you going to be watching for when this plays out?
Yes, you're exactly right, because you're talking about the difference between being rigidly adhering to the doctrine of stare decisis, which is a respect for previous decisions, versus what is the actual text of the Constitution say? What was its original understanding by the people who either wrote the Constitution or wrote the 14th Amendment in 1868? What was their original understanding? That's what we want to see the court look at. We want to see how many true originalists are now on the court and may indeed just toss out Roe completely because it just doesn't comport with the original understanding of the 14th Amendment.
As the arguments are unfolding, and this will be an unusual case because we'll actually get to hear the arguments this fall because they're not allowing audiences into the courtroom, so they're playing the audio live. What will you be listening for to maybe see how they might tip their hand on this one, which way they might go to either do, as you mentioned, stare decisis, to uphold the past decisions, or to do something new?
Right. Well, there are certain justices I probably won't be paying attention to, like Clarence Thomas. He's already on record as saying Roe versus Wade was wrongly decided, that it has no basis in the Constitution. The other three justices I won't be paying that much attention to are the three liberals, Breyer, Sotomayor, and Kagan, because they support abortion, obviously, and have done so in the past. Roberts, we've seen him kind of protect the institution of the court rather than seeking the correct result. So I'm not all that confident, but he will be a key person to listen to see which way he's going on this case.
And if I may, in his defense, he's tried to say that that's a power that the legislative branch ought to be doing, is if they want activism, that should happen with the elected officials, the Senate and the House, not the Supreme Court. I mean, that he's even wrote that into some of the decisions he's done.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a correct statement of law. And the three newest judges, Kavanaugh and Amy Coney Barrett and Gorsuch, those are the three we have not heard all that much on. There was an abortion case in 2020, of course, in the June medical case, where the issue never really got around to overruling Roe versus Wade. So I will be listening carefully to the questions that those three justices ask to see whether or not they are going to indicate that this is a case that really needs to turn on the original understanding of the 14th Amendment, or whether this is simply a matter of applying Roe or modifying Roe, perhaps, or something completely different that we haven't even thought of.
Now, of course, First Liberty Institute, all we do is religious freedom. Do you see an impact from how this is decided as far as the religious freedom of Americans? What will that impact be?
Absolutely. As anyone who's been paying attention to the news over the past few years knows, abortion has really come and impacted the issue of religious conscience, whether it's religious hospitals, religious doctors and nurses being forced to perform abortions. Some states are passing those laws. It even goes back to things like being forced, as religious organizations are being forced to fund abortions in their healthcare plans, or even going back to Little Sisters of the Poor being forced to pay for things that could cause an abortion. It has profoundly influenced the religious freedom sphere of our constitutional jurisprudence. So this case could have a major impact on religious freedom going forward.
Far outside of the life issue. I mean, the precedent it sets could be applied many different ways, right?
That's exactly right. Yes. Once you get abortion out of the way as a constitutional right, you're going to have what's left as a constitutional right, and that is freedom of religion. And those two won't be in conflict anymore because religious freedom will be the preeminent right that must be considered.
A lot of good insights in there. I appreciate that. I want to give you a minute before we go to let you share about the work you do with Daily Citizen there at Focus on the Family.
Oh, thank you. We are a part of Focus on the Family. We're a web-based news service. We write stories that affect the family, including about parenting, about marriage, about the life issue, about religious freedom and free speech. It's what we do every day, and we try to bring that good news and as well as the bad news to our constituents on a daily basis.
Yeah, and I appreciate the clarity of the writing you do. You do a good work with that, and it's much appreciated.
Thank you, Stuart.
Anything else you'd like to share before I let you go? I appreciate your time today.
I appreciate you guys and the work First Liberty does, and I have the pleasure of knowing a bunch of you guys personally, and I always look forward to seeing each of you when I get a chance.
All right. Good to see you, Bruce. Thanks again.
Same here, Stuart.
I hope that was helpful to you to hear that unpacked, and especially the larger issues as far as they pertain to the area that we tend to focus on, that we exclusively focus on, of religious freedom. A week after the Supreme Court considers that case, First Liberty is going to be at the Supreme Court as co-counsel in a case with Institute for Justice that involves school choice out of Maine. The argument there is whether families know best for what's best for the education of their children, and we'll be unpacking that as it goes. In December, then, we'll have a series of special episodes, including on December 8th when we'll be live in front of the Supreme Court, and this is unusual. We mentioned it earlier, but because the High Court is not allowing an audience in to view the sessions, they've taken the unusual step of making a live audio feed available, so we'll be able to listen to the arguments in real time. So we'll have a conversation in front of the court talking about the case, and then we'll let you hear through our feed here at First Liberty Live the actual arguments as they're taking place in the courtroom so that you can hear and weigh them for yourself. All you have to do is go to firstlibertylive.com to subscribe, and we'll send you reminders for each episode as they come up. Oh, and next week, First Liberty Live will be on Tuesday. You know, there's a holiday on Thursday. We're all going to be stuffing our faces with apple pie and turkey. But on Tuesday, we'll be talking to former White House Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany about her new book coming out. It's she'll share how faith guided her journey through the White House. You'll want to catch up on that conversation. If you can't watch it live on Tuesday, it'll be available as you have those days off later in the week. We will see you next time.